Okay, and what becomes one of the more exciting parshios, Parshas Pinchas, begins with the understanding that HaKadosh Baruch Hu turns and gives Pinchas a reward, Bekanoas Kenasi, when he acted on my jealousy. And the Medrash tells us that when Hashem gets angry for a single moment, Kel Zoim Bechol Yom, God gets angry for one moment each and every day. It was precisely at that moment which Bilam was able to account for and to try to curse Bnei Yisrael in that moment. The only thing is that on the day that Bilam tried to curse, HaKadosh Baruch Hu didn't get angry. Now, the Lublin Rav, the founder of Daf Yomi, the late great Rav Meir Shapiro, Zecha Tzadik Livracha, explains that Hashem's anger holds back the world from such extreme free love that would fuel unchecked boundary violations in the name of love. In other words, says Rav Meir Shapiro, if not for the fact that God got angry each and every day, people would be so much in love, and there would be so much free love in the world, it would be such that there would never be any violations in our ayos. All boundaries would be off. And thus Hashem's anger is a check and a balance to acting out on taiva. Maybe this is the concept of the pure id, the pure id that needs a superego in Freudian terminology. Anyway, this is why, says Rav Meir Shapiro, when Hashem is not angry on the day in question, the result was that Benos Moav came about, and there were enticements of Jewish men, and the men broke their own boundaries, and they were running around with Benos Moav, even though they knew that it was improper. And so therefore it was Pinchas's anger that provided the spark that restored the homeostasis to the free love in the Jewish camp. In other words, says Rav Meir Shapiro, when Pinchas was Kanoas Kenasi, when he got angry on my behalf, right, then what happened was, as a result, Am Yisrael and the world at large was able to once again restore the balance of boundary, which allows for the stopping of the flow of a concept called free love. Anyway, thereafter, the Torah continues with its discussion, reminding us, V'shem Ish Yisrael Hamukeh, that the one who was involved in the process was Zimri ben Salu. And the Medrash comments that actually Zimri's name was not Zimri, but rather the real name of Zimri was Shlumiel ben Tzuri Shaddai. He was the head of the Shevet of Shimon. So the question has to be asked, why is his name hidden? If his name was Shlumiel, then call him Shlumiel. So the author of the Likutei Chaver ben Chaim suggests that in naming one who was a Rasha in his evil, Birishaso, we never want to mention the names of Hashem that were in his name. So the name Shlumiel has the name of God in it. Tzuri Shaddai has the name of God in it. So we don't want to include God in the context of mentioning a Rasha. The Likutei Chaver ben Chaim also adds from the Chasam Sofer that we know a person who has no mazel is called a Shlumiel. We call him in Yiddish a Shlumiel. But Shlumiel is from Shlumiel because the Gemara identifies 12 miracles that happened to Pinchas in order to kill Zimri. So if Pinchas had all the mazel, must be that Shlumiel or Shlumiel obviously didn't have any mazel. But still, we call him a Shlumiel, not a Zimri, because we don't want to call a person a Rasha. So we say, he's a Shlumiel. He's not a Zimri. Even though what we mean to say is, he's a Zimri. Anyway, the Torah continues after this first episode to give us the results of a census of the Jewish people. And we read all the way up and include the fact that Hu Dasan Vaviran Kriyaida, in regard to Dasam and Aviram, we're reminded about the Adas Korach. So Korach gets no mention in the census as the leader of the rebellion, while Dasan and Aviram bear the brunt of the rebellion. Why? Why is that acceptable in the Torah's logic? So Rabban Zion Tzisling, the old former Maggid of Yerushalayim, explains that when a community seeks elections for any public position, let's say a rabbi or a principal, there are always many factions and focus groups who bring about their different personal concerns about the position. This group wants a Yerei Shemayim, that group wants a Democrat, this one wants somebody who will hold their shita, this one has to be more open, more closed, whatever the case may be, and each group considers it their job to go ahead and advocate for their position. But there's one group in the bunch which is a group with no personal interest. That group considers it their job not just to make trouble and stir the pot. And the same can be said about the Korach episode. The Bechorim and Shevet Levi had something to lose with Aaron's appointment to the Kohen HaGedolah, Because one of the two was supposed to be the leaders of the Jewish people, either the Bechorim or Shevet Levi. However, once we learn in this week's parasha that Dasam and Aviram had an older brother, Nemuel, then we can conclude without a doubt that they were neither Levi nor Bechor. So the only reason that they fought hard was for the sake of having a machlokes. And so therefore, in regard to somebody who wants to just keep the machlokes going, they bear the brunt of the mention of the machlokes. Thereafter, we're told of the stories of Benos Tzlafchad, and the Torah identifies the Gemara in Baba Basra, and Daf Kuf Yud Tes Amud Beis notes that the Benos Tzlafchad were Tzidkanios. Why? Because they didn't marry until they found somebody who was worthy. So Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov says, this is so serious that the youngest got married at 40 years old because each one of the girls was waiting for Mr. Right. The question has to be asked, does it make sense that they didn't meet Mr. Right in 40 years? Maybe we should argue that they too were perhaps too picky. So the author of the Year David suggests that the people of the Dor Yotzei Mitzrayim stayed away from the daughters of Tzlafchad because they thought that the father Tzlachad was a bad person who was Mechal al Shabbos, only thinking about himself. When this episode happened, it became clear that even Tzlafchad had intended L'shem Shamayim, and his daughters especially, were worthy to receive a section in the land of Israel. At that moment in time, it was evident. So they didn't settle, they got what they deserved, and at that point they found worthy spouses. Continuing on the Tzlafchad theme, the Medrash also tells us that the woman did not participate in the Cheda Egel nor in the Cheda Meraglim, which is why the section of the Benos Tzlafchad appears immediately prior to the death of those who died in the Midbar to demonstrate to us that the men perished, but these women and others like them all lived on. In fact, Hagim Yonason and Micha, Perek Vav, Pasuk Dalet, explains that Miriam was sent to teach the Torah to the women, Vashlach lefaneches Moshe Aaron and Miriam, that Moshe was sent to Yoreh Mishpatech Eli Yaakov, and Aaron HaKohen was sent to be the Kohen Gadol. And Miriam was also a Jewish leader. Her job was to do what, says the Targum Yonasan, to teach Torah to the women. So Moshe Tzvi Neria explains that in a certain sense, she did her job better than Moshe and Aaron did. So how could that be that the man of Hashem and the Kohen Gadol should not be as successful as their sister? Moshe's people and Aaron's people died in the Midbar, while Miriam's did not. So Rav Neria suggests that the secret to success in Chinuch is in the connection between teacher and students. Moshe spoke the truth. Aaron practiced truth, and people admired him for it. But in addition to speaking and teaching and modeling, it was Miriam who got into it with the women. She led and danced with them, and brought out the proper way of being with them to them. Everyone saw that one could be like Miriam, and as such, everyone aspired to do so in his or her own life. And so therefore, there must have been some degree of connection. Thereafter, the episode of the Benos Tzlafchad, Moshe Rabbeinu was told that he's going to die. And Moshe requests, Yivkod Hashem Elokei Aruchos Yisho Al Ho'eda, that Hashem should choose a man to lead the Jewish people. Moshe wanted his children to take over for him. And Moriv Rabbi Reshechta always points out to us that every parent wants to see his child take over for him, but it isn't a guaranteed. Moshe's smichos are always done biyad, but the tzibur always has to go along with it. And so that's why when Hashem tells Moshe to choose somebody, he has to choose Yehoshua and give him the smicha le'enei ho'eda. To be a Jewish leader, a person has to be, on the one hand, chosen by HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but on the other hand, bifnei ba'eda, so that the people are able to follow through with him, that it has to be evident that he was selected. The end of the parasha deals primarily with the karbanos. All the karbanos of the Yamim Tovim, the Karban Tamid, and beyond. In regard to one koach, karban, we're told, Vasisem ola l'reach nichoach l'Hashem, that you should make it as an ola l'reach nichoach, and that appears in regard to the karban of Rosh Hashanah. This is the only time that the word Vasisem is used instead of v'hikravtem. And the pasuk with the change requires us to ask the question as to why it is. So the Yerushalmi in Rosh Hashanah learns that when we go to a din to go to judgment on Rosh Hashanah and we emerge in peace, it's as if we have become new people. We are Vasisem. We have been made into new people. Now, how does one remake himself in such a short time? So Reb Nosson Tzvi Wachfogel explained that a person doesn't remake himself. Man merely chooses a path in life on Rosh Hashanah. He chooses, am I going to be good or am I going to be evil? And the fact of the matter is that if he chooses good as his guiding principle, then things will be good and he will change over time. On Rosh Hashanah, man has the chance to choose to be good or evil, and that choice is not as long. Finally, at the context of the Haftorah in this year, it's the first of the Gimel de Paranusa, the three difficult Haftorahs, Yirmiyahu HaNavi is told to ask, what does he see? And he says, I see a makel shaked. I see a staff that's beginning to give off its almonds. Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky's Atzal, there's a brand new sefer that just came out on the market this year, of the Torah of Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky on the Nevi'im. So Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky explains that there are certain facts that aren't evident at the time that we look at them. The fact that a staff has no buds or leaves, but will give off almonds, or that a pot, sir nafuach, which is also one of the nevuos, that is boiling, has a heat coming from the north. These are matters that are normally concealed from the human experience. However, the power of nevuah clues us into the intentions of Hashem who runs the world long before the Churban happens. Yirmiyahu knew this, that long before the Churban happened, there was going to be a Churban, and he tried to warn the people. Alas, those warnings did not get heeded. We have a responsibility to see the senses of nature and the forces of time, because they too speak to us. And if we learn to have sight beyond sight, Be'ezus Hashem, will be zochet to Geula Shlema, and a Shabbat Shalom to all.